Our first case for argument today is 25-1195, Quillett v. DVA. Mr. Weeks, please proceed.
Thank you and good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Andrew Weeks on behalf of the petitioners, Heather Quillett, and American Federation of Government Employees, Local 1133. Today, we are asking as a threshold issue that you determine that you do have jurisdiction to hear and decide this appeal.
How could we do that in light of Bonner?
Because in Bonner, the parties did not raise and the Court did not consider that the permissive use of the may language in the second sentence of Title V, Section 7421F, which states that you may obtain judicial review. It does not say you may only, so it didn't consider whether you can also obtain judicial review via the Administrative Procedures Act.
But Bonner,
go ahead.
Even if you have a new argument on Bonner, Bonner still says you don't get judicial review unless you're in the specific circumstances described by Bonner. The fact that somebody comes in with a new argument for why our precedent is wrong doesn't make it precedent. It makes it maybe an en banc argument, but we're bound by Bonner, aren't we?
We believe that because, yes, I understand that, and we are asking for a change of law, if not for reconsideration. Our position is that this is not necessarily different from Bonner. For what Bonner considered, Bonner considered that 7463 appellate procedures, and considering that, there is no judicial review right. The APA was never brought up. In that case, our position is we would probably request a petition for rehearing en banc if the circumstances arise once this decision is entered.
Well, how would you envision judicial review working? I mean, the statute doesn't say anything about judicial review except for the specific circumstances that you agree aren't present here. Like, what would be the statutory basis for that judicial review?
It would be the Administrative Procedures Act. There's a strong presumption with the Administrators Procedures Act as outlined in there, and the Supreme Court has outlined that.
That's not the way employment law works, though. I mean, an federal employee only gets judicial review when Congress specifically says that. That's true not just in Title 38 employees. It's true for CSRA employees, too. There are whole classes of people covered by Title V that still don't get judicial review for one reason or the other. So relying on some kind of presumption of judicial review just doesn't work in the employment context.
Well, under the APA, if a statute authorizes judicial review, then you can bring APA action for that judicial review. Our position is that the may obtain judicial review authorizes that judicial review.
But that may doesn't apply to the employee in this case. It applies to the people that have gone through the disciplinary appeals board, right? So to the extent Congress has authorized judicial review for Title 38 employees, it's people who have had some kind of like professional or whatever the language is and go through a disciplinary appeals board. You're saying by saying that may, that means that anybody else not covered by the specific circumstances also may obtain judicial review?
Well, this is specifically relating to grievance arbitrations. So when in 1991, when they revised it to allow Title 38 employees to be able to organize and be part of unions, that's when they added this language about they may obtain just judicial review, similar to how you can obtain judicial review if you are a Title V employee.
Oh, you're referring to the language in 7121 now, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, but that language just says basically if the statute otherwise provides for judicial review of that kind of adverse action through other procedures, then if you go through arbitration, you can get it as well. That's
yes.
The point of that statute. Well, you can't otherwise get judicial review for this type of action, even under the regular Title 38 procedures, not the collective bargaining procedures, right?
We agree.
Somebody that's not subject to a major adverse action involving professional or whatever the statute is, doesn't get judicial review under Title 38, whether they go through arbitration or not.
That's currently, yes, the standing of the law.
Well, that's what the statute says. There's only a specific subset that gets judicial review, and your client doesn't fit within that. So whether 7121 has no function here because there's no statutory right of review at all for people in your client's situation?
Well, it says may. It doesn't say may only. Our point is that it says may specifically relating to grievance arbitration. So if she wasn't a bargaining unit employee, then we agree. She would not have any sort of
grievance. You're using the may from 7121.
Yes.
But you're reading out the rest of it on the same terms that you could have gotten judicial review, I'm paraphrasing, under the statute.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of 7121 is, I mean, it's largely was in the context of CSRA employees who could go straight to the MSPB or could choose arbitration. And if they chose arbitration for an action that was otherwise appealable to the MSPB, they could come here. If it wasn't appealable to the MSPB, they couldn't. The sentence you're talking about, I think, extends that right to non-Title V employees that similarly have judicial review. But the problem with your client is she doesn't have judicial review at all under Title 38, right? So you can't bootstrap Title V into a review provision when Title 38 doesn't give your client any judicial review at all.
I think part of the issue is that Title 38, when it adds the bargaining rights, specifically is referring to Title V, and then Title V refers back to these other personnel systems. And
so what? I mean, yes, she has bargaining rights, but she doesn't have judicial review under those bargaining rights. Only certain individuals that go through the disciplinary appeals board have judicial review. That's clear in Title 38.
Yes. And so what we're saying is that there's also the Administrative Procedures Act allowing her to have judicial review. And
can you cite me a case that provides that the Administrative Procedures Act standing alone gives employees the right to seek judicial review of adverse actions?
No, Your Honor. I can't. So we do believe that based on that, and especially with the Loper opinion that came out about reviewing agency action and providing deference, and with that, it doesn't say may only, as I said, so we understand that.
I'm not sure why you're citing Loper to us. People keep citing Loper to us in every single administrative law case. All that Loper did was get rid of the deference to agency, you know, interpretation standards. It didn't somehow change our standard of review for APA cases or open up a vast variety of APA arguments.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that.
If we agree that Bonner is binding, we have to dismiss, don't we?
Yes, Your Honor. If you agree that Bonner is a binding, we agree you have to dismiss. Our point is, like as I had said earlier, about the reconsideration based on that APA. If it was able to be reconsidered via the APA, we do believe this is the court of proper jurisdiction pursuant to the APA Section 703, which states that.
Do you know where the Title 38 employees that do have judicial review rights come to? Because there is a specific provision in Title 38 for judicial review, but it doesn't specify which court. Do you know that if any employees have taken cases under that and where they've gone?
I believe I'll have to check on that. My understanding is district court for that, though. But I don't have those cases in front of me as we speak. But my understanding is that would be district court.
And just to keep our language straight, it's Administrative Procedure Singular Act.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, sir. So, yes, that normally would be district court on those. The 703 says that if there's a special statutory review scheme that has special expertise, as this one does for federal employees, it would be here. Otherwise, yes, we would need to bring it with the district court. If we do get past the jurisdictional argument, this case, we are asking that this case be vacated and remanded for further proceedings because the arbitrator's opinion in this circumstance was not based on substantial evidence. As outlined in our brief and in the record, there's four main issues regarding that. The first is whether there was a bona fide analysis of the aggravating mitigating factors from during the penalty determination. The second is whether Article 15's safe harbor provision for drug use applies. The third is whether Article 14, and this is from the collective bargaining agreement, the collective bargaining agreement's Article 14 progressive discipline policy was followed, and finally, whether there was an adverse inference for having the union represent her at the step three grievance process. Regarding the first issue, in this case, a zero tolerance policy was applied by the deciding official, even though there is no zero tolerance policy, and she did not evaluate the rehabilitative factor or alternative sanctions. Ms. Quillett is the only first-time offense of marijuana use to be terminated from this facility ever, and that there's unrebutted evidence, or last 30 years, excuse me, from the union president, from the deciding official herself. She had never terminated somebody for this, and they didn't consider, she admitted she didn't consider alternative sanctions, there was not a bona fide analysis. Pursuant to SAES, there needs to be a bona fide analysis when that zero tolerance policy does not exist. And she based it upon an erroneous zero tolerance policy. Second, whether Article 15's safe harbor protections for drug use applies. It specifically applies for drug abuse. When asked why this didn't apply at the hearing, the deciding official said it was only because this activity was egregious. The arbitrator's decision didn't address whether the activity was egregious. There's a range of penalties from reprimand to removal. She chose removal, but because of that range of penalties, it wasn't egregious. But the arbitrator never decided this. And on remand, he should decide whether egregious applies. Instead, he applied that criminal misconduct prohibited this, even though that was not the testimony of the deciding official. She never mentioned criminal misconduct. Third, whether Article 14's progressive discipline applied, the arbitrator or the deciding official again applied a zero tolerance policy and did not follow progressive discipline, even though none existed. And finally, whether there was an adverse inference for after her removal, after attending the oral reply, using the union to represent her at the step three grievance process, and that was held against her for not appearing in person, and we believe that was a violation of her union rights.
Using your rebuttal time, do you want to continue, or do you want to save time for rebuttal?
I believe I had saved 3 minutes for rebuttal, but I...
You're into it now.
Okay, I'm done, Your Honor. Thank you.
That's a good idea. Okay, Mr. Carhart.
May it please the court. The appeal should be dismissed. This court does not have jurisdiction to review the arbitrator's decision under Bonner, which controls. The only thing I would add to the discussion that the court had with Ms. Quillett's counsel is on page 20 of our brief, we cite three cases that have considered this argument that there's APA jurisdiction.
Counsel, if Bonner doesn't apply, what are we to make of 7127F that refers to judicial review may be obtained in the same manner, et cetera, which suggests that judicial review is available. And 7462F2 says, in any case in which judicial review is sought, these two provisions seem to suggest that in an appropriate case, judicial review is possible.
It is possible when there's an issue of professional competence and a major adverse action. So that's a 7461. That's governed by 7461. In that case, there absolutely is judicial review. The problem for Ms. Quillett is this case is governed by 7463, which doesn't authorize judicial review. Congress, the only way to read the statute as a whole, this 1991 Act that we're talking about between 7461 and 7463 of 38 U.S.C. is Congress made a conscious choice to distinguish between situations in which judicial review is available for questions of professional competence and a major adverse action on one hand, or the situation of Ms. Quillett, which doesn't fall into that bucket, and therefore judicial review isn't available.
Is there anything in the legislative history or otherwise that illuminates why Congress chose to allow judicial review of removals involving professional competence and not removals for other reasons?
So I'm not aware of anything specific to that question. What I can say is that prior to the 1991 Act, there was a historical tradition of doctors and nurses being able to challenge particular types of actions, in particular professional conduct actions, through a specific VA procedure. And the idea was they should get peer review for issues of professional conduct. So that was always a special category. After the CSRA was passed, Congress came to view that procedure as inadequate relative to the CSRA procedure. So at that point, Congress said, we need to rethink this. So they maintain this process for professional conduct issues. They also set up the 7463 process, but don't allow judicial review for it.
So if the employee here had been removed for professional incompetence and elected to go through, because of a CBA, elected to go through arbitration rather than the disciplinary appeals board, she would still get judicial review.
That's right. Then the analogy would be the 7461 process, which allows.
And so, but all Title 38 employees, whether they're covered by a bargaining agreement or not, can't get judicial review for 7463 matters.
That's right.
Do you know where the judicial review goes for these cases?
My understanding is it's district court, but.
Is it an APA action in district court?
That's my understanding, but I'm not certain about that. So if there are no further questions on jurisdiction, we set out responses to each of Ms. Quillette's arguments on the merits in our brief. I'm happy to stand on those unless there are any questions.
I mean, the penalty seems pretty severe under the circumstances.
So it's important to emphasize that Ms. Ginsburg, the deciding official's penalty, did account not just for the fact that Ms. Quillette had smoked marijuana, but the fact that in Ms. Ginsburg's view, her explanation had shifted. You can see that even in Ms. Quillette's hearing testimony, where she goes from saying she's not sure at Appendix 43 whether she'd smoked more than once to at Appendix 50 saying actually there was another time. So my understanding of Ms. Ginsburg's analysis and the Douglas factors analysis is in the appendix, is it didn't just consider by itself the fact that she'd smoked marijuana. It also considered the surrounding circumstances. And when there's a perception that an employee isn't being straightforward about the habitual nature of it.
I understand the deciding official to make a decision on the basis of a lack of credibility. Did you, or dishonesty? I mean, do you think that she actually made such a finding?
I do, Your Honor. So, sure. So Appendix 137 is the deciding official's testimony. And towards the middle of the page, Ms. Ginsburg says her response, her oral response and her written response did not match up. And then she goes through the different explanations that have been given. And then in the Douglas factor analysis, at Appendix 620, so Appendix 619, with respect to Issue 9, Ms. Ginsburg says there were several inconsistencies of why Ms. Quillette engaged in illegal drug use. So I do think, and she also notes that a lack of remorse, which I think is connected to a perception that there was inconsistent explanation. If there are no further questions, we ask the Court dismiss or alternatively affirm. Thank you.
Mr. Weeks, you have some rebuttal time.
Just briefly in rebuttal, Section 7463, the statute is silent on judicial review. It doesn't expressly prohibit it. So the purpose of the APA is to fill in the gaps, and that's why we are making that argument.
But you don't have a case that suggests the APA authorizes judicial review of adverse actions in the absence of an affirmative statute authorizing judicial review, do you?
I do not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
That's it. Appreciate it. That's up.
Thank both counsel. The case is taken under submission.